a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I think government will come to order. I'd like to welcome everybody here today. We're going to start today with some Senate bills. We've got one House bill left, and we're going to take that up after we take care of these three Senate bills. I'd like to welcome everybody that's here. Welcome those that are listening over the Internet. And I'll give you that brief reminder of cell phones. Please shut them off. And if you've got a laptop that's got sound, please shut that sound off. This time I'll ask the Secretary to take the roll.
Representatives Craig.
Here.
Hayek. Heinert.
Here.
Latterell.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
Olson.
Here.
Otten.
Here.
Soli.
Here.
Tolson.
Just got here.
Tyler.
Here.
Rosen.
Here.
Rounds.
Here. We do have a quorum. I'd like to greet everybody, welcome you back. I know some of you had a pretty tough time, especially those up in the northeast part of the state. Glad you were able to make it back today. We do have Representative Heineman is not going to be here today. He had a scheduled appointment that he had to be out of town for, and Representative Hayek is pitching a bill. So I think we've got enough bodies in here to make some votes today. At this time, everybody spent the weekend reading those minutes, I hope. Is there any discussion and or action on the minutes of our last meeting? We have a motion from Latterell to approve the minutes, seconded by Representative Craig. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes are so approved. I'd like to remind everybody, if you're going to testify today, please sign in. And if you have any paper or documents to pass out to the committee, we have pages here to assist you on that. And with that, I'd like the pages to come on up, identify yourselves, tell us where you're from.
I'm Emily Johns. I'm from Bonesteel, and I'm going to go to Black Hill State for political science.
I'm Danielle Keller, and I'm from Cheyenne Eagle Butte, and I plan on going to University of South Dakota and major in marketing.
Well, thank you both for being here. We appreciate the assistance you give us, and you can always reconsider that USD. You know, Black Hills is a great university. Obviously, everybody knows where I went now. Chair has discretion. We're going to go in order. The one that's below the line, it'll stay below the line until we get the first three Senate bills done, because I would like Representative Hayek to be back, and hopefully her bill will be done. We will get started. First bill up today is Senate Bill 88, authorize the county to deny bids on county sales tax deed properties if the bidder is not current on property taxes due. It's time the chair will ask for proponent testimony on Senate Bill 88.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Bruce Rampelberg, Senator for District 30. We bring this bill on behalf of one of our counties in our district. They've had an issue where we have an individual that seems to bid on properties and then turn around and rent them, and unfortunately hasn't paid the taxes on his other properties. And right now there's no way to deal with that, and so we bring this bill to hopefully allow the county commissioners an opportunity to make decisions that will obviate or prevent some of this activity. So I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Senator. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 88.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Bob Wilcox with the County Commission Association. Senator Rampelberg explained exactly what this bill does. It's a permissive legislation for our counties, but it certainly, as he indicated, we have we want to clarify the authority that the commission has to deny a tax deed. So with that, we ask you for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional proponents on Senate Bill 88? Any further proponents? Seeing none, open it up to opponent testimony. Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 88? Seeing none, I'll open it up to committee questions. Any questions of the committee? Everybody have that figured? I'll ask one of Mr. Wilcox. I gotta stall some time here. I'm waiting on committee members. This seems like it's something that should have been brought up decades ago. Why? I mean, if you can answer that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're probably right, Representative Rounds. It has been, I think, probably in the past, people have been denying these upon a sale if they do know. But it is unclear. The statutes are unclear. And so this is brought to our attention by our county this last summer. And we went through our association, the proper channels. And now we're just making sure we're cleaning up and making us sure that we are on solid ground when we are denying that.
Follow up, represent. I don't need to follow up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Wilcox. Just one little concern with it, and I guess I need clarification. It says current on all property taxes. Now, is that going to be construed as just property taxes proper, or how does that fall into assessments and fees?
Mr. Wilcox.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. It's a very good question. Currently, what we're referring to is all property taxes within the county that the tax deed is being sold.
Follow up? Okay, so my question is then, is that does not apply to assessments and fees, though? Because I know sometimes the county treasurers will look at that in the same light.
Mr.
And I have personal history with this, that's why I'm asking.
Mr. Wilcox.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otten, yes, property taxes is what we're speaking of.
Thank you.
Further questions of the committee? Representative Latterall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Wilcox. My question is basically, is there situations where a person would be in a dispute about some type of issue? I think this may be related to the last question, but would be used as an excuse to deny a bid. Is there those types of situations that you're familiar with?
Mr. Chair,
Wilcox.
Representative Latterall, I guess I'm a little uncertain of what you're talking, your confusion in your question. Could you walk me through a little bit more of that?
If a property owner is in a dispute about a various tax or assessment owed, then they may be ineligible to bid. Or if somebody were to... That was my question. Would that be a situation where they'd be authorized to deny the bid?
Mr. Walker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Latterall, this legislation does not prohibit you from bidding. What it does allow the commission, the commissioners, if they find out that you are the recipient of the tax deed, and and you're not current on your current taxes, they can refuse to sell you that tax deed.
Representative Tolson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Wilcox. We're on line 7, where it says property taxes. In your opinion, is that clear enough, or should we say real estate taxes? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tolson, we're pretty comfortable with the current language of the bill, and I think that I'm glad you brought that to our attention. If we find, as we move forward, and we need a specific clarification, I would certainly not hesitate to come back and ask you for that permission.
Follow up? Further questions of the committee? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony, and I will now open it up to committee discussion and our action. Representative Tyler?
I move a due pass on Senate Bill 88, please.
Motion by Representative Tyler, due pass, Senate Bill 88, seconded by Representative Rosem. Do you have a comment?
It makes sense.
Thank you. Any further comments on the due pass motion? Seeing none, the question is, due pass on Senate Bill 88. All those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Craig.
Aye.
Hayek. Heinert.
Aye.
Latterell?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Soli?
Aye.
Tolson?
Aye.
Tyler?
Aye.
Rosem?
Aye.
Rounds?
Aye. Senate Bill 88 having a unanimous vote
We'll move to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Chair.
Representative Olson.
Objection.
We have an objection on your consent motion. This bill will be moved to the floor and placed on the debate calendar. Second bill is Senate Bill 126, an act to revise the provisions that authorize townships to combine the offices of a clerk and the treasurer. At this time, the chair will ask for proponent testimony on Senate Bill 126.
Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Committee. Tona Rosen, District 20. SB 126 is an act to revise the provisions that authorize townships to combine the offices of the clerk and the treasurer. Currently, townships with 20 or fewer resident voters can combine the offices. SB 126 would allow townships with 50 or fewer voters to combine these positions. As the size of ag production operations become larger, fewer people reside in the rural areas of our state, and the demographic forecasts expect this trend to continue. In the ag community, the average age of residents has steadily increased over the last couple of decades, thereby reducing the number of people able to perform the duties of that board. Many potential township officers have taken employment off the farm, which often requires commuting long distances to their jobs, and their jobs and other commitments leave little time for them to serve on these boards. A recent survey of 16 counties containing 244 townships showed that approximately 50% of the townships have 50 or fewer resident registered voters. 30% have fewer than 20 voters. SB 126, if passed, would allow but not require the combining of the clerk and treasurer positions. Then it would be a decision of all the township voters who come to the March annual meeting. Remember, this is the one true democracy that we have. Local people deciding what is best for their township is where the decision should be made. SB 126 would give townships another option to deal with the population decreases that affect them and may allow more townships to fill a critical position when a declining pool of qualified candidates exists. Combining the positions is not expected to increase the risk of security in handling funds, as both the treasurer and the board chairman are required to sign checks, and there are other controls in place. The South Dakota Association of Towns and Township Board of Directors approved setting the number of voters at 50 to allow combining the positions because they believe in the bigger townships where more candidates are available, it is good government to involve as many people as possible. I'll stand by for questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Any additional proponents on Senate Bill 126?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Dick Howard, representing the South Dakota Association.
Of Towns and Townships. Well, Representative Rosen did a great job of explaining what we want to accomplish and why. The bill is very simple. It's just on line 5, it changes the word from 20 to 50. And it also says here that at the annual meeting where all of the voters of the township are encouraged to attend, they can vote on motions, they can make motions. I mean, it's just a real grassroots democracy. So it would be up to the voters who come to the annual meeting whether they wanted to combine these two positions, and then they would elect the person that would serve in both positions. The association talked about increasing the limit to 100 or reduce, taking the limit totally off, but it was their consensus that in the larger townships where they don't have problems finding 5 candidates to serve on the board, that it'd be good government to involve as many people as possible. So that's why we arrived at 50, and I would ask for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. Any other proponents on Senate Bill 126? Any additional proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 126? Are there any opponents? Seeing none, I'll open it up to committee questions. Are there any questions of the committee? Representative, do you have a question?
No, I move action.
OK.
Okay, now I'll open it up. I'll close public testimony and open it up to committee discussion and or action. Representative Hayak.
Do pass on Senate Bill 126.
Second. We have a motion do pass by Representative Hayak on Senate Bill 126, seconded by Representative Craig. Any discussion on that motion?
This makes all the sense in the world.
Further discussion on the do pass motion, Representative Latterall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the proponent did a great job explaining this issue and answered all the questions I had, so I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion on the do pass motion? Hearing none, the question is, do pass on Senate Bill 126. All in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Craig.
Aye.
Hayak.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Latterell.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Sully.
Aye.
Tolson.
Yes.
Tyler.
Aye.
Rosam.
Aye.
Rounds.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, with consent.
We have a unanimous vote to pass on Senate Bill 127. We have a motion by Representative Hayak for consent.
Second.
Seconded by Representative Latterall. Discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of moving it to the consent calendar, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Senate Bill 127 will move to the floor with a due pass motion and placed on the consent calendar. Or, excuse me, 126. I was already moving ahead to the next bill. 126, thank you. It'd be nice if 127 too, 126 too, but we'll get to that one next. Now we are up to Senate Bill 127. An act to revise certain provisions concerning the Health and Educational Facilities Authority. We will look for proponent testimony on Senate Bill 127.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Harry Christensen. I'm a registered lobbyist for Sanford Health Systems. 127 is, in essence, a bill that would allow the at its discretion, the authority to require or not to require a mortgage on a specific facility that it finances. The reason that this came up is that doing business in over in the state of Minnesota, we discovered that they had a tax that we don't have in South Dakota. Surprise, surprise. That tax is a mortgage filing tax, and it's a 0.0023% of the total cost of the mortgage. As you can imagine, hospital facilities are very expensive, and the mortgages are large. And so what would happen is that there would be a cost incurred that would not be incurred anywhere else because of that. What this bill allows is the authority which finances acquisitions and expansions of health facilities, the discretion on whether or not to require a mortgage. It just changes shall basically to may, and there's some other language in here that the LRC provided and the authority provided to clean up some other provisions of the law, but that is the operative position on it. We support the bill, obviously, because it will decrease the cost. In addition, the authority, through its lobbyist, is present to discuss the any further details of the bill that you may, or questions you may have, that specifically is the mechanics of a bond issue or how it works. With that, I'll stand by for questioning with your approval, Mr. Chairman, and allow the other proponents to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen.
Thank you very much.
Additional proponents on Senate Bill 127.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Matt McCauley. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls, registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Health and Educational Facilities Authority. We are in support of this legislation. Basically, the legislation would allow the Health and Educational Facilities Authority the ability to choose and decide whether or not a mortgage would be required for a specific bond issue and whether that would be needed or not. Current law requires a mortgage. This would grant some discretion and the ability to decide whether or not that is needed. We've done some research with other out-of-state, other bonding authorities in other states, and we understand that all of them have the choice of requiring a mortgage, and many of their bond issues do not, in fact, have a mortgage. So we would encourage your passage of this legislation. When we reduce these transaction costs, we then reduce the cost of the borrowing, which means that the borrowers are not paying those costs, meaning that the people who are using these facilities end up paying less to use the facilities, and ultimately the borrowing costs are lower. So we would encourage your support of the legislation. It makes sense and grants some additional discretion by allowing the mortgages to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCauley. Further proponents on Senate Bill 127.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Dave Hewitt. I'm representing the South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations. Really nothing to add other than to voice our support to a very important authority that does provide access to much-needed capital for our healthcare providers in the state, and to keep them doing it as efficiently and as effectively as possible is very important. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hewitt. Additional proponents on Senate Bill 127. Are there any other proponents? Seeing none, I'll open it up to any opponent testimony. Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 127? Seeing none, I will now open it up to committee questions. Questions of the committee. Representative Tolson.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. Question for one of the proponents, whoever would like to answer it. May I do that?
Yeah, state your question, and whoever gets up here first will answer it.
The question I have, could you carry us through a example of the way it's done now and then the way it could be done if this bill passed? Thank you.
Is there anybody willing to take a stab at that?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Tolson, for the question.
Please identify yourself.
Matt McCauley, lobbyist for the South Dakota Health and Educational Facilities Authority. Here again, we're going from a looking for the we're going from a shell to a may, and in these cases, under current law, a mortgage is always required to be taken, and there are recording costs with these mortgages. And what we're seeing in other states, like in Minnesota, as Mr. Christensen was referring to, these recording costs are significant. And we just took a look at the authority gave me a list of, we're looking at, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars if you take a look at a total of these projects as these mortgages are recorded. So when a project is financed by the authority and the bonding authority steps in and provides the financing, if mortgage may or may not be required to secure that indebtedness. Now, in some cases, in many cases, in other states, it's not required. In South Dakota law, we're unique where it's mandated. And so we want the ability to do is consider these on a case-by-case basis and determine whether or not that recording of that mortgage or if a mortgage is necessary, because if a mortgage is given, in under state law, it has to be recorded to be effective. So it really just is simplifies the process, gives that discretion, allows it to move forward and make a decision on a case-by-case basis whether that cost and whether that security of the mortgage is needed. Mr. Chairman?
Do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up question would be, will this affect the rates at all on the bond?
Mr. Chairman? I believe this will reduce the borrowing costs where a mortgage right now is being recorded, where it may not have been necessary or required, but because of the state law that required it to be given, that required a mortgage to be there, they may have, if they'd had that flexibility, they may not have done a mortgage, and so therefore the borrowing costs may have been lower, so it potentially could reduce the borrowing costs in those cases.
Do you have a follow-up? Mr. Christensen, do you want to add to that answer?
No, it won't affect the rates at all.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions of the committee? Any further questions? Seeing none, I will close public testimony and open it up to committee discussion and or action on Senate Bill 127. And I noticed a prime sponsor just showed up. Would you want to add a me too, or I would allow him a few seconds for...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm sorry, I had another bill up in another committee, and I was informed that I would be notified when this was up, and I was not. But what they said, basically. So thank you. Thank you, Representative Lust. Now I will open it up to, does anybody have a question of Representative Lust, since we didn't? We'll bypass that. I'll close public testimony, open it up to committee discussion and or action on 127. Representative Rosen.
Move to pass.
Motion by Representative Rosen to pass on 127.
Second.
Seconded by Representative Tolson. Any discussion on that do pass motion? Representative Rosen?
It makes sense to me because it would seem that I didn't realize that you couldn't just bond without having a mortgage. So if you can actually issue bonds as a tax-free entity, it's good for the bondholders as well.
Thank you. Any further comments on the motion do pass on Senate Bill 127? Seeing none, the question is, do pass on Senate Bill 127. All those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Craig.
Aye.
Hyatt.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Lutterell.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Tolson.
Yes.
Tyler.
Aye.
Rosen.
Aye.
Frowns.
Aye. We have a unanimous vote in favor of due pass on Senate Bill 127. Representative Hayak moves consent.
Second.
Seconded by Representative Rosen. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Senate Bill 127 will move to the floor with the due pass recommendation and be placed on the consent calendar.
We'll be moving back to House Bill 1220, which we discussed last week, and we'll first have the sponsor of the bill.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and honorable members of the House Local Government Committee, Representative Tim Rounds, District 24, from Pierre. If you recall, last week, Thursday, we were discussing 1220. We had a lot of questions coming from the committee, and I actually had to get up and give some rebuttal, which kind of stunned me because I'm not used to doing that. But today, I don't think that rebuttal is necessary because during the days since Thursday, an amendment has been drawn up on this bill, which we look as a friendly amendment. And so I'm going to sit back and allow the proponents of the amendment come up and speak to it. If they will pass that around while I'm moving here. But there is an amendment, and I think we've got something that'll work. But I'll remain available for questions, and I'll turn it over to the other proponents.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there further proponents that would like to speak while the amendment's being passed out? Handed out?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Doug Holfer. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. You know, in spite of what you heard last week, we are in the business of providing folks fun in the state park system, and golf carts obviously are part of that from the viewpoint of the proponents of this bill. And so we did work together. We took on the challenge that the committee gave us last week to try to come up with an amendment that would satisfy our concerns for public safety of the rest of the folks that are using the parks, and at the same time make it possible for golf carts that are properly equipped for licensed operators to get out and use the parks, at least those roads that are deemed safe by the Game, Fish, and Parks Commission. So what this amendment does is, first of all, it takes care of the first concern we had with the bill as it was originally drafted, which would have opened it up not only to use on the roads, but also on regulated use off the roads in the parks. And this amendment would get rid of that reference altogether. Our commission already has the authority to regulate off-road use of golf carts or any other kinds of OHVs in the park system, the proposed bill would have trumped that and would have caused us to have to go backwards on where we already are on those regulations. But with the amendment, that's taken care of. The second thing, and more importantly, what the amendment does is it does allow the commission the authority to set up regulations that will allow golf carts on designated roads within the state park system so long as the operator of the golf cart is licensed to drive a motor vehicle on the roads. Secondly, that the golf cart has the basic equipment that every other motor vehicle, including a moped, is required to have by law, which is brakes, brake lights, a headlight, and a horn. And finally, it would require that the owner of the golf cart have it insured based on what the law requires of any other motor vehicle operating on the road. So it does all those things, and it gives our commission the authority to set up rules. And to give you an example of what those rules might include, we have roads now within the state park system that are higher speed roads. Most of our roads are low speed, and those would be the roads where we would allow this golf cart use to occur. But on a road like the county road through Sechi Hollow that's posted at 55 miles an hour, or the state highways in Custer Park that are posted at least 55 miles an hour, or the Wildlife Loop Road, which is a faster road, probably posted at least 50 miles an hour, our rules could preclude that. In by just simply saying that roads under a certain designated speed limit would be open to this type of use, provided that these other considerations are taken into effect. From the proponent standpoint, what this bill does, and I think it's fair, is it does not require the golf cart to be licensed as a motor vehicle. And, of course, that's problematic because right now, another statute says that you can't license an electric golf cart to use on the rest of the roads in the state of South Dakota. And so it's problematic to get that license. And I think one of the proponents did a good job of explaining some of the issues that they ran into trying to license their golf cart. So this would avoid that conflict by not requiring on those park roads that are designated by the commission and only those roads the use of golf carts as long as the other safety equipment is in play. We certainly can support the amendment. We would advocate it, and I'd stand by for any questions that the committee would have for us.
Thank you. Is there further proponent testimony on the amendment 1220-OA?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Vern Brackey. I'm representing myself. Rob Schonsberg and I basically came before the committee and expressed some concerns about using our golf carts from our private campground area and within the campground area. And I think this friendly amendment does address most of our concerns. Obviously, as a parent, we use a lot of common sense. The safety equipment requirement, we're already basically in compliance with that, so it's a non-issue. The driver's license requirement, it should be a non-issue. We never really ever wanted exceptions or requested off-roading, you know, with these golf carts. We're just trying to get down to the lake shore to fish and get back to the cleaning station and clean the fish and get back to our own campground without being picked up by the fun police. We really never wanted to be on roads that are traveling 55 miles an hour. We're all about safety. We have our own families, plus our own concern for our own personal safety. Our issue was, one of the major issues, was just trying to license these golf carts, and I think this friendly amendment can address that by not requiring us to try to come up with a title and get license for these particular carts. I think I and Mr. Schonsberg would very much support this friendly amendment and probably follow this issue so that if rules are promulgated that do interfere with the use of our carts, we'd bring it back to your attention. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bracke. Any further proponents' testimony?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dana Swenson, Department of Public Safety, Highway Patrol. We would also support the amendment as written here.
Thank you. Further proponents? No further proponent testimony. We're on the amendment. Any opponent testimony on the amendment? Any opponents? Didn't think so. I think our opponents all turned to proponents. It's a good deal. Okay. We will first take action on the amendment. Oops, I'm sorry, questions, yes, questions. Woods. Latterell, representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for one of the proponents who would like to answer the question. There's a provision for insurance here, and I've looked up the statute that's referencing. Could someone explain to me the need to have the golf carts insured and in what other circumstances they're required to be insured? To me, that seems to be not necessary to insure a golf cart with the low speeds and the limited liability.
Madam Chair, Dana Swenson, Department of Public Safety. As far as the insurance requirement, that was something that we had agreed on, both the proponents and opponents, that there should be a provision in this for insurance on the vehicles. As far as explaining the exact reasoning, we think that there could possibly potentially be a liability involved in this if they're operating on roads with other vehicles. Obviously, there's a chance that somebody could get injured or somebody could get run over or run into another motor vehicle that's on the road. So I believe that's why the insurance provision is in there.
Do you know the methods by which you license or insure a golf cart, and is it different than a traditional vehicle?
I cannot speak to that.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess Representative Latterell, I can answer that question. We currently carry liability insurance on our golf carts for our rentals, and that's part of my liability insurance for the whole place. You can purchase full insurance on your golf cart in case it burns up or gets stolen or you just crash it. And you can also purchase liability insurance, and it is extremely inexpensive because your season is generally about 6 months. So,
thank you, Representative Heinert. Are there any further questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Can anybody point to me the legal definition of golf cart under our state statutes?
If you'll give me one moment here, I believe I do have it. A lot of papers for golf carts. Golf cart defined. Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe what you're referring to is the statute 32.14.13. Is the golf cart defined? And it says for the purposes of 32.14.14 to 32.14.16 inclusive, the term golf cart means a four-wheeled vehicle originally and specifically designed and intended to transport one or more individuals and golf clubs for the purpose of playing the game of golf on a golf course.
Follow. I guess looking at all these, I was fine with the way the bill was. I think we've got too many regulations on something such a small vehicle. I guess, do we require these same safety requirements and insurance on the horses that we have in our state parks. It sounds like an absurd question, but a horse can go up to 40 miles an hour and is not as safe as a golf cart. And I know they're allowed in our state parks because I found it. Are we going to require these same safety provisions on a mode of transportation that travels three times as fast as these golf carts? I guess.
Is that a comment or a question?
A little bit of both.
Would anybody care to address that question? Okay.
Well, I think there's two-part. Doug Hofer with the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. First of all, horses aren't allowed to ride their horses on the roads in state parks. They're limited to horseback trails, and they're only sharing those with other horseback riders. So that's one difference. The other question, what was the other part of your question, Representative Nelson?
What type of regulations do we have on the animals, the riders?
You know, I'll give you an example based on statute of what requires these same kind of regulations, and it's in state statute. If you drive a moped, which has to have a motor of less than, I believe, 50 cc's, even a moped, which is an unlicensed vehicle that can operate on streets throughout the state, is required to have this same safety equipment.
Any follow-up?
If it's going to operate on a road.
Thank you.
I just, as vice chair, I'll offer an opinion. I've been around golf carts quite a bit, not as much as our cohort down here, but I have seen injuries at very low speeds. I've seen people fall out of them, and there's such a thing as night golf, and you need to have the safety equipment on golf carts, I believe. Further questions? Representative Tolson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Due to our abundant intelligence or lack of it, I have a question. On a golf cart, it just happened in our family. Nothing bad happened, but the adult got off, and there was a child on there, and they just fell on the foot feed, and it went. But we got it stopped. Do you think we should have, if the golf cart is unattended by the licensed driver, that the key should be out?
Representative Rounds.
Madam Chair, I can answer that one. First off, golf carts in most cases don't need a key. One key fits all in a lot of golf carts. They really don't have a specific key that just, in a lot of cases, it fits just one. Where the golf cart is makes a difference. If it's on your property, servicing the property, it's covered under your property coverage insurance, and a lot of accidents happen there. And now what this one's asking for is insurance if you're using it off the premises. And having a key in there really won't make a difference, because if somebody wants to start a golf cart, any small key in a lot of these conditions will work.
And Vice Chair, make a statement. I kind of compare this to being near the water with children. You have life jackets on them. They're not allowed to go near the water without the life jacket or without an adult. And as an adult being responsible around young kids, you need to pay attention to that as well. Representative Nelson.
Yeah, question for the sponsor or anybody that can answer it. Now, according to this, will these folks be required to pay additional prices to be able to display a valid park entrance license on this go-kart?
Mr. Chairman, this will allow our commission to require a valid entrance license on the golf cart, yes.
So to confirm, what we're doing is also authorizing here additional costs that will go to people that bring in a golf cart to the parks. Am I correct?
If they're going to use a motor vehicle, which this golf cart is under statute, they do need to have it licensed with a park entrance license. Just like any other off-highway vehicle, motorcycle or motor vehicle or camper that's used in the roads. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Follow-up? Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The original language of the bill, which we drafted, does state that a golf cart displays a valid state park pass. I think that was something us proponents were willing to ask for. Since it does deal with transportation, it is a vehicle and a moving vehicle on the golf carts that are on the, in the park. So as a proponent and as the sponsor of the bill, we were willing to agree to that stipulation.
Further questions? Representative Nelson?
Yeah, for purposes of a posterity, can anybody tell us what that additional cost would be?
Ms. Vice Chair, just looking at some sites online, liability is $50 annually, aftermarket light kit, $90 to $140, aftermarket horn, $7 to $35. It looks like it can cost somebody up to $200 to bring a golf cart into compliance. And I think that's something to consider there. Thank you.
Go ahead.
And I will follow up on the park pass. I think the park pass is $30 for the first vehicle. Then you get a discount of 50% on the second vehicle, which I think is $15. So your first vehicle would be $30, golf car would be $15, so your total park passes would be $45.
Further questions on the amendment? Do you have any further questions on the amendment? We would consider action then. Okay, we have a motion from Representative Heimert.
Point of order.
Okay. We have a motion and a second on the amendment. Any further discussion? This would be on Amendment 1220-OA. Sorry.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Okay, first of all, I really appreciate what you're trying to do here. And the example of the family reunion where, the older people couldn't get to the showers and to the bathrooms, and I understand that, I have a special permit, that sort of thing. I guess I'd like to go back to the purpose of the state parks. I would hope that if this passes that there would definitely be rules and regulations that there are no golf carts allowed in horse camps and that the golf carts would stay within the camping area. And, okay, and aside from that, I guess when I go to the park or when I go camping or whatever, I'm going there for peace and quiet. I'm going there to take my grandkids hiking. And I can see, there's a golf cart parked there. It's not just going to be the licensed driver. The kids are going to be on it. And I have a real concern with that. How's it going to be regulated? Do people get tickets for this? That type of thing. And they will be on the roads. And, again, I look at my experience, and I know that you're going to say they have to be off roads 35 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour or more, that sort of thing. I'm pulling my horse trailer, and whatever camp you go to, whether it's like in this where the horse camp comes in, you look at a rig like that behind you, you cannot stop. You can't do it. I mean, I am careful, and 99.9% of your horse back people are. But this just really causes a real concern with me, so I hope that would be one of the things. And, if you're off there camping, what's wrong with walking? I have a real hard time with this. This is what we're out there for. I have a hard time. I'm so glad they finally put in electrical hookups because we'd go camping and there'd be somebody next door with the generator. This is what camping and campgrounds are for me. They're not go-karts and golf cart places. So that's my issue. Not that I'm not going to vote against it or whatever, but those are things I think that we need to think about too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to address some of these issues brought up. Presently today, a golf cart can be used in campgrounds if it is licensed, if it has the safety equipment. They are used within the campgrounds today to service them, and some people do license them. The main question that we had and brought this bill is electric golf carts were not defined as being acceptable. And what this is doing is kind of bringing in the electric golf cart, which is quiet, as opposed to those noisy ones that you hear around. But the rulemaking authority will be given to the game fishing parks on roadways. And we heard that testimony about, you know, the 55-mile-an-hour speed limits in some parks. Our original legislation excluded Custer State Park completely. But there are also other campgrounds that have those 45, 55 mile an hour speed limits. And I think in some cases, 35 mile per hour speed limits might be too fast for these carts to be on. And that's what the rulemaking authority is being granted to the game fishing parks to do is, okay, we're going to be looking at this now. Which roadways can we allow them on and which can't we? And most of the parks I've been in for camping, when you go through a campground, the speed limit's 10. Maybe 15 miles an hour. So I think what we're doing here is just bringing in the electric golf cart for those that are fishing, especially along the Missouri River system here. You got quite a ways to go to get to the dock. It's moving your pickup back and forth, either that or a golf cart. And I think safety reasons for a little kid running around, a golf cart would be a lot safer. Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative. Follow-up,
yes. Thank you for those comments. I appreciate that, and I just the safety issue is so imperative here, and I'm trusting the game fish and to, you know, come up with some really good safety rules there. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to be opposed to the amendment. I'm with support of the original bill. I mean, I think our country's turning into one big nanny state. I mean, as a good gentleman talked about the fun police, I think this was a failure of our parks personnel. There was no indication that these folks were stopped for exhibition of speed or driving erratically. This should have been handled, I think, in a much more professional fashion on scene. You know, do we need a regulation for every facet of human interaction? I don't think so. And now we're going to require folks from out of state coming to the great state of South Dakota to have a good relaxing time. And we have a lot of elderly people visiting the state of South Dakota, and we're going to ask them to make sure that their golf carts that go 15 to 18 miles an hour are equipped better than what we're requiring the horses that are more dangerous on the trails that are more dangerous. I mean, at what point do we stop regulating people's lives? I mean, there is a benefit of being in a free country. Plus, we're going to start charging them more money. I'm fine with the original bill. I'm not fine with the amendment, and I'll be voting against it. Thank you. One last thing. Consolation to the good gentleman that used to work in the governor's office. It ain't fun having all them blue badges swooping in on you, is it?
Representative Tolson will let you speak.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment, in my opinion, I will be voting for it because it does add the electric golf cart. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tyler.
One more comment, that if you are riding a horse in the state parks, you will have insurance. You have liability up to Ying Yang, and you are restricted to be only on the trails. You cannot ride on the roads. So, yes, thank you.
Any further discussion before we decide to vote? Further discussion? Okay, this will be voting on the amendment 1220A. All those in favor will signify by saying aye.
Aye!
Nays?
Nay!
The ayes have it. Now, we need to move on to the bill. And do we have any proponents that want to speak?
No,
nope. We're done. We're finished.
Let's open it up to
discussion. No, no discussion. Action.
I'm moving to pass on this. I'm sorry. Troy is eyeing me on the horses thing, and I'm going to have that discussion later, I think.
All right. Representative Tyler has stated a do pass, and I have a second over here from Representative Otten.
Aye.
Any further discussion on the bill? Where all the opponents and proponents have come together, which I say that is how it's supposed to work.
Well,
all right.
First of all, it does make sense, and thank you for your explanation, Representative. I'm totally confused. I'm not totally confused, but thank you, Representative Rounds, for explaining that to me. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any further comments? Okay, the Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Craig.
Aye.
Hayek. Heinert.
Aye.
Butterout.
Aye.
Nelson.
Nay.
Olson.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Tolson.
Aye.
Tyler.
Aye.
Rosen.
Aye.
Browns.
Aye.
Ten to one.
Ten yay.
We have 10 yeas, 1 nay. This will move on to the floor. Do we have somebody who would like to carry this in the Democratic caucus?
They take care of that.
They take care of that. All right, you got it.
Do you want this back?
Yes, I do want this back.
I'm left-handed.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, for handling that discussion. With this bill, that ends our House bills for this session. Crossover is next Tuesday. Just a brief reminder to members of the committee, next Tuesday I'd like to see you wearing black for crossover day. We're going to be getting into the Senate bills here. We're pretty far ahead of schedule, so we're doing pretty good. Representative Tyler, I do need a definition from you before next meeting, and that is on yin-yang. Is there any comments, discussion concerning the good of the committee? Hearing none. Although we have a motion to adjourn. Some words. Representative Rosa moves to adjourn, seconded by Representative Heiner. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We are adjourned.